Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Good evening and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm Sammy Jacobs. We have a special edition for Indiana signing day here with Matt Weaver from Pigs.com. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Indiana signed 13 high school prospects and a graduate transfer in DJ Matthews from Florida State. What are your first impressions of this class yesterday?
I think it's a good class. I mean, it's small, and when you look at the rankings, it's down because it's a small class, and obviously one of the things that helps your rankings is not just the quality of the players, but the quantity, the number that you sign. So when you sign only 13, the transfer doesn't count. Matthews is not counting the rankings. So when you only sign 13, and one of them's a punter, and punters get ranked just, you know, automatically, you know, low, so that drags you down. But they got a lot of the guys that they wanted at the positions that they were looking for. Quarterback with McCauley, the receivers, tight end with Aaron Steinfeld, the lineman, you know, across the board, Cooper Jones. They got a lot of the guys that they were looking for, Maurice Freeman and Larry Smith and in the defensive backfield. So they you know, if they didn't get the very top guy, they were in that – the guy they got was in that top group. He was in that top however many guys they had at those positions. So when you do that and you're not moving down to plan B, plan C, or even plan D, I think you've done a pretty good job putting together a class.
With the small class, were you kind of surprised that IU signed all 13 guys with no visits? Now maybe that, you know, not having visits until at least April forced their hand a little bit. But was that kind of shocking to see how many guys actually signed on this early signing period?
Maybe a little bit, because I know some of them were kind of wondering, you know, kind of, you know, maybe thinking about putting it off. Jordan Greer being a guy, Maurice Freeman being a guy. There was a few guys that told me that they were thinking about maybe waiting because and it was kind of before they extended the dead period because they wanted to hopefully take some, you know, come visit Indiana before they signed. But obviously that wasn't possible, as you mentioned. So, I mean, a little bit surprised, but then again, you know, if they didn't sign, you know, Indiana might've moved on to somebody else and they might've been kind of left out in the cold a little bit, you know, with at least until, you know, maybe not having as great of an option as before. So, you know, partly I am and partly I'm not. I mean, it's just such a weird recruiting year. I feel so bad for these guys, you know, because they've had to make these decisions basically sight unseen. And, you know, it's tough. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what kind of transfer rate you have from this recruiting class in a couple of years, because guys have made such, you hate to say uninformed, but they're kind of uninformed decisions just because they weren't able to visit. Now, obviously, you can learn a lot about a school and do what we're doing with the Zoom call or FaceTime and all that kind of stuff. But it's not the same thing as obviously being around somebody in person and being physically on the campus.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought IU did really well, and I didn't get a chance to ask Tom Allen about it, but maybe the next time we have availability, the access that the video crew at IU's had this season has been phenomenal. You know, we've never really seen the locker room celebrations outside of, you know, a bucket game here and a bucket game there. But to go inside, you know, see Tom Allen jump into the pile, the mosh pit after Penn State, see him celebrating with the spittoon after Michigan State, and even his speech after the Ohio State loss, when, you know, a lot of times in the past that's been, you know, closed doors, we're not seeing it. How much of a role does that play in recruiting, and how, you know, in the future, Indiana has to keep doing this? Because I find it, if I'm a recruit, you're taking me in the locker room and seeing a lot of these things.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic too. I thought the other thing that was good was the stuff, you know, you would kind of see guys during the game walking up and down the sideline with the camera when they're sitting on the bench, or even when they're like right on the sideline, and they would show that stuff maybe a few days later after a game. And I thought that stuff was fantastic as well. So I think you're spot on. I mean, when you can't, I mean, that to me, you do that no matter what, but it's incredibly, or especially more important in a year like this, when you can't get them on campus, you can't get them in the locker room after games, you can't do any of that stuff. So this is the next best thing. I mean, it's, you know, it's not the best thing, but it's the next best thing as opposed to, you know, being there in person. So I think, you know, I don't know if it's the Cuban Center that's doing a lot of this. I think it is. And, you know, kudos to them. But I think you're right. I think this is the kind of stuff that Indiana just never did in the past. I mean, this is the stuff me and you would talk about. We'd be like, you know, you need to do this. You need to promote the heck out of this program and get this stuff out there. And they're doing it. And I think, you know, how much it pays is kind of hard probably to quantify because it's, you know, but I think it's definitely something that guys are paying attention to and guys are watching. I will say this, the one positive I think with guys not being able to take visits, those guys who normally if they were at another school and Indiana was beating a Michigan or up beating a Wisconsin, they wouldn't have got to see that. Now they're all sitting at home on their couch. In all these games, they've got to watch that Ohio State game. I can't tell you how many guys told me how impressed they were, even though they lost, how they came back from, what, 35-7 and got it back and almost won the game at the end. So the one good thing is they got to see Indiana. They actually probably got to see more Indiana games with COVID than they would without COVID, just because obviously a guy every weekend is going to be visiting a different school normally.
Yeah, and Indiana, since they didn't play Purdue, none of their games were on the Big Ten Network. You know, the Rutgers game was supposed to be, but it got moved up to Fox Sports 1. So they were either playing on Fox Sports 1, Fox, ABC, or ESPN.
Yep.
And that could do wonders as well. Let's go through the signing class a little bit. Who are some guys who can make – now, it's going to depend on who leaves and, you know, attrition-wise going into next year. But who are some guys who could have an impact on the field in 2021?
Well, I mean, I think you obviously start with the grad transfer, DJ Matthews. I mean, that's why you bring somebody like that in. He's not a big guy, kind of WAP size, but really quick, fast, elusive, just kind of – you kind of guy you would get the ball – in the open field and let him make plays. He was a fantastic punt returner at Florida State, one of the best in the country. So obviously he's kind of an obvious one. I know a guy you really like, Jordan Williams, the receiver who's from Albany, Georgia, but played his last year at Trinity Christian in Texas, where Deion Sanders was the offensive coordinator. He's a mid-year guy. I think he was a guy that you could kind of pencil in to be an early contributor. But the fact that he's coming in mid-year, I think even makes it even more so. Or at least a better chance. So those are two guys. Cooper Jones, I mean, I know he's a freshman. D-line's not an easy position to play, but physically, I've seen him in person. I saw him in the semi-state at Zionsville. Physically, this guy is ready to go. Obviously, he's got a lot to learn. He's got you know, get all the technique down and all that, but I think physically he's a guy that could do it. Maurice Freeman, I think he's going to be a Husky. Watch his tape. I mean, he's a heat-seeking missile. This dude lights people up. Now, DB is probably maybe the most loaded position, arguably, on the roster, talent and depth-wise. But, you know, you're going to have – assume Marcelino comes back. He'll be in the mix, Bryant Fitzgerald. But they like to rotate guys, so I could see him being a guy. Larry Smith's another one. Corner's a loaded position. But he's got a little Taiwan Mullen to him with the way he can get the ball out. He gets interceptions, strips the ball. Just those kind of instincts, that knack that some guys just happen to have. So he's a guy I like, and I think John Kev Smith, another receiver, just because you're going to probably lose a couple receivers, assuming Freifogel and Watt Fillier go pro. Obviously, Rashawn Williams transferred. So there's a chance for some guys to get in the mix at receiver, because while there's some talent there, there are some opportunities to play right away.
Yeah, I had Jordan Williams as my sleeper in the class. I also think he might be one of the better prospects in the class, if not the best. And I think he's also an instant impact guy, but nobody was really talking about him. He put up on a show on ESPN or ESPN2, whatever, during their high school football showcase. He played that national schedule in Texas. He played under Deion Sanders in the OC. He's a good kid too. I've talked to him and I've talked to his dad, and they're all in on IU. He kind of reminds me of Freifogel in that he could go up and get the ball, and he has enough speed, especially in a college program. If you get him in for, you know, an extra 6 months in the weight program, he can add to it. Is this class done? Do you expect them to get more transfers coming in? Is it something where you have to wait for, you know, the end of the season for the transfer portal to go off, or is this, you know, and see who, you know, what attrition you have and what your scholarship numbers are?
I think it's possible. I don't think you're going to see, you know, four or five guys in February or even in the spring, unless, excuse me, unless you have a bunch of attrition on the team, which obviously we won't know that for a little while, but I think you could see a few more guys. I think they'd like to get another DN if they could. You know, Cooper Jones is more of a strong side, bigger DN. I think they'd like to get a guy. They've been like DK Bonham, they've been playing at that, they call the bull position. I think they like to get a guy like that, maybe a smidge bigger, but kind of an athletic, almost like a big linebacker who you can put at the end and he can rush the passer. So I think if there was a great, like a really good athlete, receiver, skill player that came available, they're kind of talking to Malachi Bennett. He's a four-star receiver out of the, I think, Birmingham, Alabama area. He committed to UAB, has since backed off. They really, really liked him the first time around. I mean, he was a top guy right up there with the guys they got, and Jaden Alexis, who's committed to Texas out of Florida. Those guys are right up there at the top. And, I think if they have a spot available, I could see him being an option too. Just to give you another, a 6'2 guy who can run, athletic, explosive. I mean, you know, those guys, the more you can get, the better.
Yeah, and then going into lots of stuff about Coach Allen, people are on Flight Aware today. Kane Womack takes the head job over in South Alabama. How is the Indiana defensive coordinator search going? For me, I thought that Jason Jones was kind of the no-brainer guy to fill in. He's been on staff. He's been a co-coordinator at Ole Miss. He's run that 4-2-5 defense. But if they go outside of the program, how is that search going?
Well, I mean, from what Coach Allen said, it's you know, I'm sure he's talking to people. I don't know if it's really in high gear right now, just because you're trying to come back from the COVID outbreak you had. You're going to start practice. Oh, you find out who you're going to play. What, Sunday night, the bowl things will be out. So Monday you get to practice. And remember, this bowl preparation is different than a normal year. It's normally at this point they're like 2 weeks in. But this year they're just getting ready to get started. So because of how the season was pushed back and all that, I think some names, I think, kind of a name that people may not be talking about, Corey Batoon. He's at Liberty. He was at Ole Miss when Allen was there. He's been a D coordinator. He knows the defense. I'm not saying he's a guy, but he's a guy that I've come across when doing some research. Raymond Woody, who's an assistant now. I think he's at FAU. He was at Florida State. He was at Ole Miss with Allen. He's coached linebackers. You know, that's a guy. I mean, to me, if you're looking for names, basically you go back and look who he's kind of come across, or it's been at Ole Miss when either Womack, and Dave Womack or Allen were there, and they kind of know this defense. Those are the kind of guys, because he's gonna try to find somebody that has some kind of experience in the defense, if possible. I mean, I'm not saying for sure that'll be the way, but I would think he's going to try, especially if this guy comes in and maybe you do a co-coordinator thing with him and Jason Jones, because he seems like the natural guy on staff. He's been a co-coordinator before for 6 years at Ole Miss. He kind of helped coordinate this defense. So, excuse me, he's got the experience. So those are the guys I look for. The pool is probably smaller because it's almost like, you know, when you recruit at a certain school, you recruit from a smaller pool of guys because of what you're looking for. And that's what he's looking for, a guy who can come in and knows his defense, if this guy is going to be, you know, a potential coordinator. Now the question is, maybe he doesn't coach linebackers. Maybe Casey Teagarden goes to linebackers. He's coached it in the past. And maybe this guy comes in and does what, you know, Coach Teagarden was doing and coaches the Husky position, or, you know, they move those positions around a little bit. I don't think Brandon Shelby's moving at all. He's done a great job with the corners. I think he's staying there. And obviously Peoples with the D-line. But you can kind of mix and match safety and Husky, or you could have Teagarden, like I said, go to linebacker and somebody else come in. So it'll be interesting. I mean, it's going to be a coveted job. I mean, when you have a team that's done what they've done, you see Kane Womack going on to a good mid-major job. This is going to be a job that you're going to have a lot of interest from other coaches. And, you know, I think he's going to have a real opportunity to find a good guy.
Speaking of interest, Tom Allen wins Big Ten Coach of the Year. There are rumors that every single job that opens, it sounds like Tom Allen's on the hot seat, or not on the hot seat, but on the short list for. Let's talk Tom Allen contract. It's his buyout's about $23 million. It probably goes up on on Sunday to about 27 million, according to Zach Osterman. He put out a great Twitter thread today detailing Allen's contract. For those of you who don't know, Allen gets a year tacked on for every bowl that they qualify for. That gets announced on Sunday. It was a 7-year deal. A lot of people are worried about Auburn. Auburn just paid Gus Malzahn $21 million to walk away. I wish somebody would do that to me. Is that a realistic destination? If you have to pay another $27 million to Indiana to get Tom Allen, and then pay however much you're going to pay him per year, you're spending $48 million of dead money to go get a coach who seems like he's locked in at Indiana.
Yeah, I don't think so. I know there was the flight aware with some flight. Here's the thing I can tell you: if a school flies from their place up to the campus or the city of another school, they're not flying up there to do an interview. I mean, they're not going to come to Bloomington to interview Tom Allen. I mean, that's just not going to happen. If they're flying up there, he's hopping on a plane and coming back with them to get introduced as the next Auburn coach. And obviously that hasn't happened, and I don't think it's going to happen. I think Tom Allen's locked in Indiana. Auburn's probably got tons of money. They probably got a bunch of rich guys who can throw around millions of dollars to do this. But you, like you said, it's basically $48 million. It's like 27.7, I think, is what Zach put in the thing, plus 21.5. So you're talking actually, what, 49 million, almost 50. Plus, when you talk about you're probably going to pay, Auburn's probably going to pay the new coach around 5. His staff's probably going to get another 5. You're talking $60 million. I just don't see it happening. To me, and Tom Allen's done a great job. I think he's established himself as one of the best coaches in the Big Ten, and he's starting to get up there in the country. But if you're paying that kind of money, you're paying it for an absolute 100% sure thing. You're doing that for like Urban Meyer, or if you could get Nick Saban or Dabo Sweeney. I'm talking, there's a very small pool of guys I think a school spends that kind of money for to bring him in. And I think Tom Allen might be that guy, but we're talking two good years, a pretty good year last year, really good year this year. And I think he's going to put together a lot of really good years, but man, that's a pretty big gamble. And then how does he fit in the SEC? I know he's been in the SEC, but not as the head coach. And that's ultra, ultra aggressive, intense, excuse me, at Auburn. I mean, let's be honest, as long as Nick Saban's at Alabama, Auburn's not beating Alabama. So any coach that goes there, you got to realize they're going to expect that, and it's going to be really, really hard to do. So I think he's a competitor. I think the Tom Allen competitor part would embrace that. I just don't think he's – I mean, I think he was on the Dockage show today. I didn't hear it, but I think he said stuff like, I love it here. I'm not going anywhere. We still got things to accomplish. I don't think Tom Allen – I think the contract by itself is enough, but I just don't think he's looking to walk out the door. I think Indiana will. I think Indiana. Hopefully, when they, you know, if they're able to, they'll take care of him. I don't think Tom Allen cares about getting paid himself. I think it's more about his staff. I mean, I'm sure he wants to make as much as he can. Everybody does, but I think he's more concerned about: are you going to give me the resources, the facilities, the staff, all that kind of stuff to be able to compete with not just Illinois, Purdue, Minnesota, but Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State. And I know those are big statements, but that's what he's looking to do. That's what he wants to do. So, you know, I think he's got a great relationship at Indiana. I didn't put any stock into it. I know it was tweeted out, but that's the problem with Twitter. You can put anything on Twitter and people think it's something's going on. I didn't put any stock in it. I don't think there's anything going on. And I think Tom Allen's going to be the coach in Indiana for a while.
Yeah. I mean, look, if Auburn's willing to pay $60 million for Tom Allen and he leaves, that's, I mean, it is what it is. It's hard to compete with that. But, you know, as you say, he seems locked in. And it's something that Indiana fans shouldn't really have to worry about. I would be more worried about Ohio State not playing this Big Ten championship yeah. game or something like that. Or, you know, who might be out for them Saturday. And what I don't get, look, I love Peyton Ramsey, and he was a great Hoosier, but it's not in IU's best interest if Northwestern goes into the Big Ten title game and beats them. Indiana would lose out on a New Year's Six Bowl because Northwestern would get a spot, and then it goes to the next highest ranked, and it's hard to believe that Ohio State would fall behind Indiana at 5-1 with a head-to-head victory in the the CFP standings. Where do you see what needs to happen for IU to get to the Fiesta Bowl? Do they just need Ohio State to beat Northwestern, or do they need help around the country where there's no, you know, major upsets like Florida beating Alabama or something like that?
Well, you would hope that Ohio State winning would be enough, but I mean, Iowa State, who is a two-loss team, and they're a quality team, but they lost at home by 17 to Louisiana, and they didn't. I don't think they were supposed to play this week. I think their game might have got canceled or whatever.
They're playing Oklahoma in the championship game.
Okay, so they were off, so they didn't play, and they dreamt up a spot. You know what I mean? Florida loses to really not a very good LSU team, and then on top of that, they were depleted playing a true freshman quarterback and a bunch of guys that were way down the depth chart. And they only drop a spot. I don't understand how they do the rankings. It's totally confusing to me. And quite honestly, I'll be honest, until this year, I never really paid attention because Indiana was never in the playoff. I mean, you kind of paid attention from afar to see who was going to be in the Final Four, but I never really paid attention to the New Year's Six games because Indiana was never, in that position. So this year I have, and I'm completely perplexed. I don't understand what they're doing. I don't know how some of these teams move up. I guess you would probably – I mean, if my question is if Oklahoma beats Iowa State and it's a close game, is that going to be enough to drop Iowa State below Indiana even though they got three losses? I don't know. I mean, so part of me is like either want Oklahoma to blow them out or Iowa State to win the game, and then Oklahoma's out of the picture, hopefully out of the picture. I don't think Tulsa beat Cincinnati. They've had a nice season, but I think Cincinnati's clearly the better team. You probably like Bama to absolutely just, you know, curb stomp Florida. But even then, is that going to be enough to drop them? They'd have to drop, what, four or five spots, I believe, to get below Indiana. So, I mean, I think if some of these games go the way you hope, Indiana's got a shot. But, I mean, it just seems like they're trying to figure out a way to not let Indiana get into the playoff. And then you have North Carolina. If both Notre Dame – my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong – both Notre Dame and Clemson, because they're ACC this year, are in the playoff – the Orange Bowl gets the next, because they're a New Year's Six game, they get the next ACC team because of the contract. And it works the same way when the Rose Bowl's not in the playoff. The next Big Ten team goes to the Rose Bowl, even if they're not in the top 12, is my understanding. I could be wrong on that. So North Carolina could jump up, which means that pushes somebody who may have gone to the Orange Bowl down, which could push Indiana out. It's just so confusing. I think they deserve to be in the New Year's Six. I mean, I know that's biased because of, you know, our position covering the team and all that. But let's be honest. I mean, they played the number four team in the country to 7 points. They've done everything else. They won at Wisconsin. They've done everything else. They can only play the schedule that was put in front of them, and they've done it, and they've won every game except for one. And I think their resume is more impressive than some of the teams that are ahead of them. But obviously the committee feels differently.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, Indiana's non-conference slate wouldn't have turned heads. But that's where you go, okay, you know, let's say Indiana beats Purdue. You're looking at a 10-win team with that non-conference, maybe even 11 wins if Illinois is your other crossover game like it was supposed to be. You're looking at 11-1 Indiana team. You're definitely going to a New Year's Six Bowl, and if the cards fall the right way, that might be enough to get you sneaky into the playoff. But there was no non-conference. You're standing there at 6-1. You haven't really played in 2 weeks. I think Michael Penix's injury I don't think the committee watches Indiana football, if we're being honest. They mentioned, well, Penix went that – well, Jack Tuttle went on a road to a place where a lot of good Indiana quarterbacks have looked like junk. And a lot of Big Ten quarterbacks have looked like junk. So it's okay. You have your backup quarterback. Well, it's like they're discounting some wins while, you know, giving credit to other teams for the same thing that IU has. And I personally think the playoffs ruining college football a little bit. Maybe they move to eight games and things like that. But here's the thing. Worst case scenario is Indiana goes to a Florida Bowl, and it's either in Tampa or Orlando, and those are areas that would, correct me if I'm wrong, would help recruiting down in Florida a lot. As nice as the Fiesta Bowl payout is, getting, and fans are allowed, I think, at these Florida Bowls, getting down to Florida, the bowl's going to be a little bit different in terms of visibility, but getting down there should help their profile in Florida too, because Arizona doesn't have a ton of prospects.
No, it's not an area where, I mean, they spot recruited, but you're right. I mean, I think the New Year's Six Bowl helps recruiting just because it's a New Year's Six Bowl, and it's, you know, that's one of the big ones. But you're right. I mean, it's amazing. If somebody would have said before the season, we would be annoyed that we might fall. When I say we, you know, the Indiana might fall to the Citrus Bowl, I would be like, oh my gosh, they've had a great season. So the Citrus Bowl would be fantastic. You know, you'd probably, I'm guessing, maybe get Auburn or Georgia. I'm not really sure who it would be, but I think it'd probably be one of those two teams. But that, you're right. You're right there smack dab in the middle of, it's almost like, it's obviously not in-state, but it's almost like your second home state for this staff, because they recruit there so much. So yeah, to me, any of these bowls would be fantastic for recruiting and for the program and getting at pub and all that kind of stuff. It just would be, you know, you don't know how often as at Indiana with the football program, and hopefully it's from here on out, this is something that happens all the time, but you just don't know how often you're going to get this opportunity to be in a playoff, or not a playoff, but a New Year's Six game. So it would be nice to be able to go to one, especially when I feel like this team has really earned it. But there would be no disgrace in going to the Citrus Bowl. And like you said, I think fans are allowed at the Florida games because, you know, Florida's kind of crazy. They're allowed at the games. And so that would be nice for that. There's no fans out in Arizona. And either bowl would be great. I mean, I think either one would be awesome for Indiana. It'd be, you know, as big of a bowl as they've been to probably since, you know, the Rose Bowl, I would guess. I mean, these are big bowl games. I mean, the Gator Bowl's great last year, but these are even a step up. So, you know, the fact that we're having this discussion to me is pretty cool that Indiana's, we're talking about this instead of, you know, would it be what's the bowl in Detroit or the one out in San Francisco, which, you know, wasn't the greatest experience ever. So this is pretty awesome in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, for a program that this will be their 13th bowl all time, it's hard to, it's hard to be picky, because guess what? Maybe this is the start of a long bowl run for Indiana. You know, now you've been at, it would be four bowls in 6 years. And before that, you hadn't been to a bowl game in like 8 years, one in since 93, and things like that. So it's definitely an interesting dynamic on do we complain about it? Do we come off as, hey, you know, yeah, look, I've been vocal about, you know, the Big Ten voting Ohio State in to the Big Ten championship game, which I totally understand and I totally get. It just didn't sit with me the right way. And then, you know, does that, you know, if Indiana went and played, now Indiana wasn't able to play this weekend anyway, but let's say Indiana would play and win that game, they would be a lock for sure for New Year's Six Bowl. So it's kind of, you know, you pile on that, well, the Big Ten's out to screw IU, and we've seen it with the officials before in every way, shape, or form. But it was just more frustration from the fan base. Final thoughts on the season and what Indiana needs to do to finish this season strong and start 2021 on the right foot?
Well, I mean, I think the kind of the first thing that's, you know, obvious is, you know, get everybody back healthy, you know, get the guys who, I think Coach Allen said there were 28, and that included staff and players. I don't know what the breakdown is as far as players, but obviously you had a number of players. So get them healthy. And I think they'll be okay, because the bowl game, there's enough time. You know, and then there's probably some guys, you know, they played seven straight weeks. I will say this. I would guess that the first Purdue cancellation was probably a little bit, I don't want to say they wanted it, but it was probably a little bit of a kind of a blessing in disguise, or a little bit of a relief, just because, you know, it's been a stressful year for everybody, all the protocols and everything you have to go through. And then you play seven. And Indiana was am I right? Three or four. There's only three other Big Ten teams, I think, that had played every game up to that point. So yeah. You had no weeks off, and obviously the Big Ten's a brutal league. So, you know, the second one I'm sure was really disappointing because, you know, I think Indiana was clearly the better team and you felt good about their chances. But just get healthy, you know, get back in the groove of things, get focused. I think that to me, we see it all the time in bowl games, the teams that come out focused. And obviously with this year and guys, you know, it's tough. They don't get to go see their families. They cannot see their families at Christmas, and they got to go do this. So the guys, the teams who can stay locked in and stay focused, a lot of times you'll see a team that maybe you don't think should win does win these bowl games. So I think Tom Allen and his staff have done a great job. These guys have come too far, in my opinion, to come out flat and kind of lay an egg. I just don't see it. I mean, there may be some rust the next time we see them play because it's been so long, but I don't think it's because they're flat or not locked in. I think they'll be locked in, and I think they'll play well, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see him play. I'd love to see him play against USC in the Fiesta Bowl. That'd be great. But playing against Georgia or Auburn or one of those SEC teams in Florida would be a lot of fun too.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, you want to win your bowl game and take that momentum into 2021 because right now the iron is hot. You got to strike, and you got to strike with your fan base. Now's the time to start plugging your season tickets and all that stuff. And this is how you build your fan base. You have, you know, with students especially, because you get a new batch every year. And so if you could get the freshmen locked in for 4 years and going to games, they're more likely either to donate to the program or get season tickets. And that overall is going to help the program. You know, you see everybody complaining, well, they got to pay Tom Allen. They got to pay for this. They need money to pay for it. It's the, you know, it doesn't magically appear. Yeah, they get a nice Big Ten Network check. And, you know, the college football playoff check is going to be nice. But that only goes so far. It's, you know, you're competing against teams who get 100,000 people every game. So Indiana could only draw most, you know, you round it up to 53,000. That's where your money is going to be made. And then those people buy t-shirts, they buy concessions, they tailgate and they park. That's how you build a program. They started winning on the field and there's no excuse anymore. They beat Michigan State and Penn State. And if there are people, I'm not being a fan until they beat Ohio State. Just go away, dude. Like if that's what you're waiting for, just take a hike up the road and go root for somebody else. But this team deserves the fan support next year. And you hope no matter who they play in the opener, I think they're scheduled at Iowa, but who knows? It could change. But for that home opener, no matter who they're playing, that place needs to be sold out. You know, everybody's dying to get back into a game and things like that. And, yeah, bowl win would do huge, huge things. But again, you know, off the field stuff, got to make a good hire, a defense coordinator, at least somebody who could recruit the South and things like that. And, you know, if, I don't know, worst case scenario, Tom Allen calls the defense, which I don't think is the worst thing in the world because you have a veteran defense anyway. So it's not going to put more on his plate if you want to get somebody, you know, hired. Somebody who's really good at recruiting but needs to learn the 4-2-5. But it's all these awards and stuff, all this publicity, IU needs to capitalize on it. And that starts at the win in the bowl game, no matter where it is. If you're playing Florida, Georgia, Auburn, LSU, whatever, you know, in the bowl game, or you're playing USC out west. And I thought I saw one projection which had them in the Cotton Bowl against Oklahoma. Just win your bowl game. And then hopefully things reset and you get a normal spring practice and you go back to business as usual. And maybe, who knows, maybe you get a surprise and get some of these guys who might have tested NFL waters. Maybe you get them back for next year, you know, seniors, guys like Jerome Johnson, Marcelino Ball, you know, guys who get that free extra year back. And you know, you could do real wonders with that and then build up recruiting too, because yeah, the numbers were low. I think according to 247's composite, Indiana was eighth in the conference. If you could bump that up a few spots, now you're building a sustainable program.
Yeah, exactly. And my guess is, I haven't done the numbers, but my guess is if you took James Evans off, they might even be a spot or two higher in the Big Ten. And I would guess, because how well the Big Ten's recruiting, if you're in the top 7 or 8, you're probably in the top 30 to 40 in the country. And if you can do that consistently, you're going to get enough good players. I've said it before, when you're talking about a guy who maybe just a low 4-star to a 3-star, I mean, we see it all the time. We bring up, look at Micah McFadden. Look at Jerome Johnson. I mean, these are two of the best players in the league, not just at Indiana, but in the Big Ten. And these guys were very lightly recruited. I mean, you know, like you said, if you finish it off, you know, we talked about this, me and you have talked about it a bunch. If these students aren't going to walk 10 minutes across campus to go to a game, they're not going to drive an hour, hour and a half when they get out of school. I mean, if they're not going when they're there, they're not going when they get out. So you're right. It's absolutely important. Go in the offseason. It's funny because after the bowl game last year, Tennessee seemed to have all the momentum, and Indiana kind of was obviously, you know, was down. And it's amazing how the seasons have gone kind of maybe off. Now, I didn't think Indiana would go 2-whatever Tennessee is. But I thought Tennessee would be one of the top 10 teams in the country, or at least maybe in that discussion. And they've gone the other way. And Indiana took that game and built off of it and let it use it as motivation. So, you know, but you'd like to go into the offseason with the win and have that momentum, especially when you can start recruiting again, when 22 kids can hopefully start going on campus after April 15th, and you can get them there for visits, and maybe you show them a Fiesta Bowl trophy or a Citrus Bowl trophy or whatever it is, and you're coming off this season. I'm really interested to see how the 22 class pans out. How many they can take, and then, you know, who they get, because I think they have really kind of they've rattled some cages this year across college football, and I think they've got some guys taking notice of them that maybe they didn't take notice before, and even some in-state kids who liked them. You know, Joe Strickland. I just talked to Joe last night. I'm not saying they're going to get Joe Strickland, but I like their chances. He's a 4-star DN from above, and he really, really likes Indiana, and they're in great shape. Now, he may end up going somewhere else, but they are right there in the race with some really good programs, and those are the kind of guys you got to start getting, you know, to kind of take that next step. Not only to take the next step, I think they've kind of done that, but to maintain it. It's one thing to take the step for 1 year, and then you kind of slip back. You got to keep doing that and maintain it. And, you know, I think the staff's going to do that. I think Tom Allen's going to do it. I think IU fans should be excited about the future. And like you said, they need to show up and support this team next year. Hopefully we can have full football. We're back to somewhat normal life. And if it is, people need to come out, tailgate, but then go into the stadium and support this team.
Yeah, and it's always great to just have another trophy to parade around to your alumni, to students, all that thing. And it gets you off the list of, you know, we've all seen the graphics this year. Indiana, the last time Indiana beat Michigan, you know, the moon had just been created, or, you know, dinosaurs roam the earth, whatever ridiculous list that they put on it. It gets you off another one of those lists where, you know, Indiana hadn't won a bowl game since the Reds were good at baseball.
I was just going to say, it's one of those lists that my Reds are on. They haven't won a World Series in, like, what, is it 30 years? Yeah, it's over 30 years now. So, yeah, too many of my teams are on these lists. You know, the Indiana basketball, they haven't won a national title in 87, what is that, 30-something years. Football team hasn't won a bowl game. The Reds, so, yeah, too many of the teams that I root for are on these lists, and I want them to get off. It's no fun.
Yeah, and it's just another list to get off of. And then, you know, because Northwestern was on that list. They hadn't won a bowl game since 1949. They finally won, and now nobody talks about it. And you see Northwestern is doing amazing things up there. And, you know, maybe Indiana's on that path where it could become like a Northwestern or an Iowa or Wisconsin. I mean, people, you remember, a lot of people don't. Wisconsin was not good.
No.
Wisconsin was not good at football, and now they're winning the Big Ten West every year and are maybe a player or two away from knocking off Ohio State for Big Ten titles. So anyway, Matt, thanks for joining us, and we'll be back. Hopefully we find out Sunday that Indiana's going to the Fiesta Bowl, but we will find their final bowl destination there. And good luck with recruiting. Thanks for everything you do with us.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, man.
All right. That does it for tonight's show. Thank you for joining us.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.